Well, up next, we're going to talk about Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science. That's the title. I kid you not. We're going to find out about it when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. J. Marvin Herndon, scientist, strong and broad background in a lot, originally trained as a physicist, earned his PhD in nuclear chemistry, received a postdoctoral training in geochemistry, cosmochemistry from the world-class master scientist. That's pretty good. What a resume there, doctor. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Marvin Herndon's Earth and Dark Side of Science. What kind of a title is that?
Well, it's at first you might think it's an arrogant title, but it's really quite precise. People back as far as 400 years ago, when the first reliable maps were made, saw the match between the coastlines of the Americas and Africa and Europe, and imagine that the continents were in motion and moved, were once adjoined and moved apart. And this was repeated over and over and significantly by Alfred Wegener, who began in about 1912. And he added a lot of information and a lot of evidence. And this, well, the scientists hated it.
They did. Why?
Well, they were believing that the Earth had lost its heat. It was cooling down and shriveling up like an apple. And it took 50 years before scientists, geoscientists, began to realize that there was something there. And Wegener's idea sort of matured into plate tectonics. And that's what we've been living with for the past 50 years. And so this is the old idea, but it's evolved for a long period of time. I began science back in the 1970s and slowly began to put the pieces together that painted a different picture. And I, well, like, for example, the idea of a nuclear reactor at the Earth's center
mm-hmm.
that we talked about back in 2002.
True.
And then only recently, in the last several years, did I realize that all of these things were consequences of one thing, and that is that the Earth had formed differently. It formed as a Jupiter-like gas giant. In fact, if you put the Earth that we live on now together with the gases and ices that were once part of the matter that is the Earth, you'd have a planet about 300 times as massive, almost identical to Jupiter.
And let me ask you, Marvin, for a moment about Jupiter. Because it's such a gaseous planet, is there a smaller planet in the middle of this gaseous planet?
Oh, yes.
A solid planet?
A solid planet. And in the case of Earth, 300 Earth masses bearing down on this solid planet.
Wow.
Would crush it to about, is my best guess, about 66% of the present diameter. That's a lot of weight bearing.
Squeeze it right down.
And when the sun ignited, that's a violent period. And with massive, super Tea Tauri phase, solar winds. And that just stripped the gases away, leaving a planet with the surface composed entirely of continental rock. But smaller. And over time, pressures began to build. And eventually, the hard, rigid surface began to crack. And the Earth began to decompress. And what we're seeing now in terms of what we see at the surface is all a consequence of this decompression.
Now, is this Herndon's theory, or is this the theory of all these scientists?
Oh, no, no, no. This is Herndon's theory.
It, all right.
In one sense, you might say it's, in a sense, similar to an amalgamation of plate tectonics and expanding Earth theory. But this is a unique theory. This is a unique theory because everything about our planet, the principal elements of our planet, for example, the age-old concept of how the mountains formed. You know, the mountains are characterized by matter that's folded over. You see this in the Alps, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You see it in all the major mountains, except the ones like under Hawaii that form from volcanoes. And this is a consequence of Earth's decompression. Imagine the solid surface getting larger because you're decompressing,
right,
and it gets bigger.
Are we done decompressing?
No, and that's the important part, and that plays into what is happening today. And that used to worry me. But I can say with a great deal of certainty now that we have not finished decompression.
Okay, and the fact that we haven't, and it will continue, means what to us living on the planet here?
Well, one thing it means, and this is crucial, earthquakes of magnitude 6 and above.
Now those are big ones.
Those are big ones. Have been increasing in number at least since 1973.
Huh.
Why 1973? Well, that's when networks were put in place to detect nuclear explosions, so we have really good data.
I thought we were going to blame it on Jimmy Carter or something like that.
No. A lot of people wish Jimmy Carter were back in Washington.
You never know.
We never know. But no, this is, well, the thing is, this is not my data. This is data produced by the U.S. Geological Survey, and it has been ignored by the scientific community.
That's dangerous, isn't it, to ignore that?
Well, it's dangerous, and I think the reason is because it's inexplicable. They can't explain it. See, the idea that the geoscience of the scientists have been operating on, this idea goes back to 1940 or so, and was built upon slowly, but it's the same idea. And the idea is that the only heat sources inside of the Earth come from the natural decay of long-lived isotopes of uranium, thorium, and potassium. They can't explain why earthquakes could possibly be increasing. But the data is there. It's in my book. And it's also been submitted for publication in Current Science.
Well, and Marv, if these earthquakes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, these magnitudes are getting more intense, people have been talking about some geologists that we know and bring on the program. They think the big one's going to hit California pretty soon. And if your stuff is correct, and I assume it is, and theirs is correct, this could be huge.
It could be huge. Now, I can't say whether the magnitudes are increasing. All I can say from the data that I've looked at so far is that the number of earthquakes of magnitude 6 and above...
That's increasing.
That is increasing. In fact, since 1973, the number has increased 67%.
Wow.
Now, this,
that's
this,
big.
What this tells us, though, this tells us that the Earth is not like people have been believing since 1940, and it's not like the Earth that people who promote the global warming agenda believe. And this has profound implications. There's also evidence from the geological past, say for the past 30 million years or so, some Norwegian geologists discovered they were looking at the lava that pours out of Iceland and Hawaii, opposite sides of the Earth.
Yeah.
And what they found is that it was variable over time, number one, and number two, it was variable in the same way over time. Lava outpourings on either side of the Earth, synchronous in time. Well, both of those sources of lava are the heat for those comes from the Earth's core. It comes from a nuclear georeactor at the center of the Earth. And we know that for two reasons. One, the seismologists have imaged a difference in the earthquake speeds going all the way down to the top of the core. And another, both Iceland and Hawaii basalt has little traces of helium that has the characteristic, the ratio of helium-3 to helium-4, that would be produced by the georeactor. And the Norwegians actually suggested that the cause of this synchronicity of lava outpouring on opposite sides of the Earth was a consequence of variability of, you might say, Herndon's georeactor.
All right, so we call this Herndon's Earth. What's the dark side of science mean? The other part of that book title.
Oh, ho, that's the interesting part. Well, the throughout the book, there are a lot of examples of science suppression. Science suppression in an instance within the National Academy of Science by a scientist who won the Presidential Medal of Science.
Why?
Well, these, you know, you have to wonder why.
There's an agenda somewhere.
Well, first of all, there in that instance, there's a lack of moral value. See, science is really a study that's based on integrity. It's all about telling the truth. So let me give you an example. This guy, I was trying to publish a paper there, and he found out about it and tried to get it suppressed, and it's a long story. But what he should have done, instead of trying to get it suppressed, he should have said, aha, Herndon's on to something.
Mm-hmm.
What's
That's right.
The next step?
How can we help him?
Yeah, and how can I make discoveries based upon what he's already done? But scientists, for whatever reason, they're small people, many of them, especially these days, not like back in the 1920s when the real discoveries were made, like the basis for quantum mechanics or relativity or things like that. And so there's, number one, there's a lack of integrity. But there's also an agenda. The universities have this idea of political correctness, and you see this all over. Well, they've applied political correctness to science, and scientists don't criticize one another. If they did, somebody would get at them in the secret reviews and things like that. Well, this is all the dark side, but this is peripheral to what the really dark side is, and that is an agenda that is perhaps the most serious agenda that humans have ever been exposed to, the name of the first chapter is Science Hijacked: A Malevolent Political Agenda. And I compare in that chapter, before getting into the real science, I compare the similarities between what happened in Nazi Germany
mm-hmm.
and the global warming
Wow, that's a pretty big comparison, Marv.
And it's a frightening comparison because things are so similar. And the difference, well, one difference, well, imagine you were one of the people in Nazi Germany who were unfit. Maybe you were a gypsy. If you were lucky, you could escape to another country. But what's happening now is happening everywhere, especially with the U.S. and with Western Europe. And that's the whole business of geoengineering Earth. I'm a member of the American Geophysical Union and the European Geosciences Union. And last April, I traveled to Vienna to attend the European Geosciences Union's annual meeting, which is probably the biggest scientific meeting in the world. But the main reason I went was to just get a firsthand sense of how the European scientists thought and reacted.
It's totally different than here, isn't it?
Well, it should be, but it's not. And that was the frightening
part.
So
it's the same? I would have thought it would be different. I think they were a little more progressive.
Well, you would have thought so, but that meeting, the whole sense was, it was as if they were trying to promote the global warming agenda. There were certain lectures that were given which were...
Which lectures. you don't agree with that agenda either, do you? Nor do I.
Oh, no, and we need to talk about why I don't agree.
Okay, we'll do that after the break.
Okay.
But go ahead. Let's continue talking about why they're the same.
Well, the thing that I found, number one, there was a sense of trying to promote the global warming agenda. And one thing was one of the lectures that's organized for the press had to do with the melting of Arctic ice.
Yeah.
And another one was a debate on the pros and cons of geoengineering. It was a debate that you see in the academic community as if this is what might be if we, the academic community, decide that this is a good thing for the Earth. But it's an agenda that is fully operational in the U.S., and in other parts of the world.
All right, stay with us, Marv. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about global warming and what's going on there. You talk to anybody in the Midwest today, they'll say, global warming? Are you crazy? It's like very cold out there. And then you have some information about chemtrails. I'm going to talk with you about that as well. Marvin Herndon's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his latest work called Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science. Well, those of you in Canada sending me emails thanking us for opening up the Amazon Holiday Magic Coast-Style CD offer, I didn't do it, so I will not take credit for that. But Amazon has done that. So if you live in Canada, you want to pick up the CD in our days available, just go to the website, coasttocoastam.com. You'll see the highlight reel, click that, and it says order here. Proceeds go to helping veterans charities. So just click that. If you're in Canada, you can now order on Amazon. If you're in the United States, you've always been able to order that way. So just go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, and look for the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. J. Marvin Herndon with us. And we're going to take calls with Marv next hour as we talk about his work, Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science. Let's get into this global warming disaster here, Marv. It's amazing how the discussion is just argumentative, too. I mean, it's so bitter. Have you noticed that between scientists and between people?
Well, yes, I've noticed this, and what I've noticed, and I think this is significant, within this discussion, how can you, as an ordinary person, how can you begin to believe which side is telling the truth, which is the correct side? And my way of looking at it is that science is all about truth. And you don't have to tell lies. You don't have to deceive people. And what you find are the people pushing the global warming agenda. They don't tell the truth. They mislead people. And this is so, it's not like a balanced discussion between scientists. It's a large group of people, and the global warming, there's an agenda driving it. I mean, this is coming out at first it began with the IPCC of the United Nations. They're the prime drivers behind that.
And their fraudulent emails and all that mess.
Oh yes. And what's their agenda? Well, the United Nations would like to distribute wealth. They'd like to, for the wealthy countries, to give up some of their money to the poor countries.
Yep, absolutely. It's like sharing television revenue in the football leagues.
Exactly. Only this is done from a false basis. I mean, at least in the football league, everybody benefits.
Yeah.
In this instance, the small countries would like to blame the big countries for destroying the environment and get reparations. Haven't gotten to that part yet.
No.
Well, then the other thing they'd like to do is they'd like to deal in carbon credits, where the big nations...
The offenders have to pay.
Have to pay the non-offenders by buying carbon credits from them. And of course, there's a whole segment of wealthy financial people who'd like to broker those. And it goes on and on, and everyone has an agenda. The scientists think they're going to make lots of money from research studies, from contributing to the science that underlies the political arena. There's money to be gained and self-aggrandizement, fame to be gained. And everyone wants something. But let's talk for a moment and ask the question, what is global warming? Imagine
let me tell you right now, if you're in the Midwest, it's not warming at all.
Okay, but now when we're talking global here, for the moment, well, let's think of the Earth as a whole, the whole Earth, because it helps to understand the basis for this thing. Okay, the picture that global warming is based upon is the following. The heat that's coming out of the Earth is assumed to be constant. The heat that's added to the Earth from the sun is assumed to be constant. Thus, the oceans overall, the temperature is assumed to be constant. And so the only thing, if you leave all of those, and these are assumptions now, and if all of those are assumptions are the same and they're all constant, well, what could cause the Earth to be heating up?
It's either got to be the sun or something within the planet.
Yeah, something within the planet. And the global warming people will tell you the atmosphere is increasing in carbon dioxide, CO2, one of the gases we exhale. And it's that increase that is trapping some of the heat that would normally be lost into space, and that's what's causing us to warm. And the CO2 is is being increased, obviously, because of all the coal-burning power plants and in other industries that use fossil fuels. Well, this is the whole idea behind the global warming agenda. And this is the part that I will tell you is wrong. And it is wrong because the earth, heat coming out of the earth is not constant. And this is one of the things in my book, and it's in a paper that I've submitted for publication. And that is that the number of earthquakes of magnitude 6 and above is increasing markedly since 1973, and I suspect since the turn of the century, but the data is not that good. And that's not characteristic of an Earth that has constant heat flowing out. You know, there's a connection between earthquakes and volcanoes. This was first noted by the Roman scientist Strabo.
Tell me the tie-in there.
In 7 A.D. And you see there's this connection between the earthquakes and the heat. And there's the connection I mentioned of the lava outpourings that indicate a change. So that's the number one flaw of the whole global warming agenda, is that it's based upon pseudoscience. I say pseudoscience by the so-called scientific community, because these people make models, computational models, models based upon assumption. Now, I was explaining to Lisa Lyon when she called about this very point.
She's our executive producer, for a few people who don't know who she is.
And she is a bright young lady.
Yes, she is.
With a great name for your business, I'll tell you. But I said to her that models are actually computer programs. And she interrupted and said, garbage in, garbage out. She stole the words right out of my mouth.
She has a way of doing that.
Yeah, she's good. And that's really the fact. You, with these computer models, they're not science. They're computer programs. What comes out of them depends on what you put into them.
But why, Marvin, are people, and I'm talking about non-scientists, nobody wants pollution of the planet, but people are confusing pollution with global warming, and they're two different issues.
Oh, they're two different issues, but I'm telling you, there is such a political agenda that the U.S. government has now classed carbon dioxide as a pollutant. Now, I'm an environmentalist. Most of the people I know are environmentalists. We want a clean planet. We want a healthy place to live. But what's happening, what's really happening is frightening, because while academics are debating, well, should we do geoengineering or not, it's actually taking place. So I guess I need to describe what geoengineering is.
All right, and who does it?
Well, it's been suggested in one of the reports by the IGPP as far back as 1996, they first started suggesting the possibility of this. The idea of geoengineering, there are two ideas. They're basically two ideas. One is we trap the carbon dioxide in the air. Sequestering is the word they like to use. And we trap it so it doesn't go into the air. It comes out of the air. Well, there's no practical way to do this. This is a technology that's never been developed, and it would be grossly impractical and inexpensive. The other geoengineering technology is the idea of spraying chemicals that reflect sunlight into the atmosphere so that some of the sunlight that hits the Earth gets reflected back before it actually gets a chance to get and warm the Earth. I don't understand the rationale, though, because if that were the only thing, I mean, it doesn't make sense, because yes, that making clouds of chemicals that reflect sunlight back into space would reflect sunlight back into space, but it would also keep heat from leaving the Earth, the infrared. George, you ever been in the desert at night?
Oh yeah.
And it gets cold at night.
It gets very cold in the desert at night.
There's no clouds to hold that heat in, and so you're seeing the idea of spraying chemicals to make artificial clouds having something that are two forces that are in opposition. It's holding the heat in as well as reflecting sunlight off. So what is it really doing? Well, what it really does, George, is poison people. And that is the frightening thing, because what goes up comes down. And we're talking nanoparticles. These are particles that are so small that they would pass right through filters. And how do you hide from them? You don't. Well, this, of course, is all part of the academic debate. But it's an ongoing operational program. I live in San Diego, California. And most of the year, unless there's a storm coming, the sky is blue without clouds, essentially a cloudless, beautiful blue sky. But this year, many of the days, the sky is filled with clouds, and you can see the jets spraying the substances out that begin to spread out and form clouds, and eventually with enough spraying the sky becomes overcast. But these aren't clouds, George, these are chemicals. Independent people have measured what these things are in raindrops coming down. And it's largely aluminum, but there may be heavy metals as well, such as barium. These things are bad for people. They're bad for the environment. Now, in San Diego, in the last 2 months, almost every day, the spraying has taken place. It was taking place yesterday.
Sure. It doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. And people generally are being conditioned to think, number one, this is, jet trails, contrails. And number two, they're conditioned to think this is normal.
So who's got the agenda for this?
Well, there's a lot of agenda. One agenda is the whole idea that we're going to save Earth. We're going to,
Is it weather manipulation?
Well, that's another agenda, and that's big time with the military. In 2013, President Obama warned, and this is a quote: "I've got a phone and a pen. If Congress won't do its job, that's to act to mitigate climate change, I'll do mine." And there's good evidence that he's already involved in this. So this is coming right from the top. And it worries me immensely, because, you know, I've lived in the same house in San Diego since 1977. I've looked at the sky. I'm a scientist. I observe things. And I've looked at the sky nearly every day. And I know what takes place in the sky, and this is not normal. This is grossly abnormal. And this has got to be damaging. I mean, aluminum's been implicated in the onset of autism.
Why can't we get, though, a pilot to come forward and start talking about this?
Probably because they are afraid. They're afraid for their jobs. Maybe they're afraid for some other reason. Maybe they've signed agreements that would put them in prison, you know, like CIA agents do and things like that. I don't know the answer, but I know this is what's going on, and I see it every day, has to be a crime against humanity. And it's a crime against the environment as well.
Does this stuff cause cancer? Do you know, Marv?
I don't know, but there was one program that that was alluded to. It was a report. It was published by the dean of the Duke University Environmental Sciences School, and apparently there was a program last year to. I guess they put chemicals in commercial jetliners that produced what they refer to as nanofibers. And these allegedly move the jet stream, causing the frigid winter last winter in the Mideast and the drought in the West.
Well, it sounds like somebody's doing it again to us this year.
Well, I would not be surprised, but I know one thing. The people that are flying airplanes, they breathe the local air. Now, we don't know. Do those nanofibers, do they get trapped in the lungs like asbestos fibers do, which do cause cancer? Mesotheliosis.
Yeah, asbestos. Yeah,
yeah, and
mesothelioma.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You know a lot of these things, George.
Well, I study this stuff.
This is good. But the alumina has got to be bad. It's implicated in the in Alzheimer's, and who knows what else. And there's the children play outside, the elderly people with compromised immune systems or respiratory systems. They're subject to it. It's gotten so that I don't like to go outside while the spraying is going on, and it's happening every day. I can't really escape it because the particles are so fine, they come inside. You won't see it really settling like a dust.
Not at all. All right, Marv, stay with us. We're going to come back and continue talking about your work here, Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science, and then we'll take your phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.